Hello, guys. Welcome to the Black Spin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to a brand new episode. Today, we have a very good friend of ours, the one and only Miles Davis, a.k.a. Tune Into Tennis.
Hey, guys. Is this where I say hey to the audience? Yeah, this is where I do. Hey, everybody. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I love Black Spin Global, so this is going to be fun.
No. We love what you're doing. Your spaces are amazing. Listen. Miles, you are amazing when it comes to these spaces. I don't know how you do it. Like,
it's sometimes I don't either.
No, honestly, it's so great. It's so engaging. You're such a great host. Everyone is, like, so, like, it's nice hearing like the fans' opinion. I know some of the players and some of the coaches have tuned in and listened very quietly to see what people are saying. And it's just nice how everyone has that freedom and you can talk about tennis with random people around the world. So I really want to give you flowers on that. And guys, if you're on Twitter, please follow Miles Tune Into Tennis and join the spaces whenever he books them because they're really great. I love them so much, honestly.
Yeah, I like when you can come through, Lucy. It's always fun. And like I was telling you earlier, people love hearing your voice too. we'll keep that behind the scenes. I don't know where like the idea from it all started, but like if you're ever on Twitter and aren't afraid of using a platform that Elon Musk is owning these days, then come on over to Twitter. It's one bright spot in a midst of a whole bunch of crazy stuff.
honestly, I'm even currently on a break, so I might join through the Black Spin Global account once because I literally logged off from mine. I was only logging in to send you the details because it's sometimes you just need.
Yeah,
you can't miss the funny tennis Twitter stuff at the same time. So I still absolutely have to be tennis.
Tennis Twitter can be a lot, but also informative and fun. So you just got to find the balance.
Exactly. Yeah. So today we're going to mainly talk about the WTA finals that's coming up very soon. But before we do that, we've had quite a few, you know, things happening in tennis and in the tournament, especially for the ATP as well. So we have to start big. This is such a big thing that just happened recently. Gabriel Jalot, the Canadian player, he made his top 100 debut after reaching his first ATP Tour final against Karen Khachanov.
Exactly.
Oh, I did it right, guys. I finally said a name right. at El Malti Open. This is such a great win. Gabriel has really improved a lot this year. Eugene, you've been a bit quiet as intro. So why don't you say first, what did you think of
Open? I love watching Jalot during that week in Almaty. ATP 250. He wasn't in as a wild card or like qualify, he was just in off his ranking. But he played like really good tennis. I think he played five matches, just solid all week. And then that final against Khachanov, free setter. Yeah. He started off a bit nervy actually.
Mm-hmm. He
lost the first set like 6-3, and then won the second 7-5 or 7-6. And then in the third, it was like obviously anyone's match from there. But I just think in terms of where he's at right now, like obviously see someone we've been kind of been tracking for a while as well.
Yeah.
To see him kind of now, I say living up to his expectations, but like playing to the level where he knows, you know, he can kind of compete at. Like, I think it bodes well for him in the future. And I think he's going to be a name like we're going to be seeing a lot more of. Now, like you said, he's in the top 100 as well. So
he'll
be in like the bigger events going into next year. Should get into Australia without having to qualify. So straight into the main draw, which would be huge.
Pretty
sure that'd be his debut as well, like in Australia. Mm-hmm. He's a player not many players are going to want to see. Obviously, we saw him in New York for the US Open where he beat Arthur Reese. Just a really, really good player to be looking out for. And I'm just happy that he's, now kind of playing, you know, at the higher level of the game and like kind of you can say goodbye to the Challenger Tour because, now he's an official, like, ATP Tour player now. So, did you watch much of him, Miles?
I didn't watch much of Almaty. I think I watched a bit of the final. But just in general about Gabriel Diallo, I've been like having my eyes on him since last year. I think he picked up a good top 20 or top 30 or so win against Dan Evans somewhere in the hard court swing last year leading up to the US Open.
Masters event, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this is like a indicator that he can actually hang with the top guys and to, mm-hmm. you know, get your first ATP final at the ATP main tour level on the books is a great achievement. And he's still young. Like, I think he's in the 23 and under club mm-hmm. with a big serve, big forehand. Like, he really moves yeah. light on his feet out there for a guy that's like 6'6 and up. So he's, mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a fun one to watch. And he's a really good competitor. I think a lot can be said for, like, going through, I guess you can call it the trenches of the college circuit. Like, you really got to have a little bit of dog in you to kind of shine in those conditions. And he did, and he's translating that to the ATP tour. So I'm a fan. I want to see how high he can take his game.
Yeah. Well said.
Definitely looking forward to that. So congratulations to Diallo, Guinea finest, you know, shout out to the Guineans out there. Another great guy that's made another big win and secured his first ATP 500 title at Basel, Giovanni Impeschi Péricard. He beat 6 seed Ben Shelton, 6-4, 7-6 in a final, and he did not drop a serve once during his run. And as we speak, this guy is a career high 31. He moved on like so quick. And I think what I'm so impressed by is like right after the Wimbledon, it was a little bit like up and down. And then mm-hmm. it's like, boom, Basel just came. And it was like, all right, I'm locked in and then mm-hmm. going in and stuff. So yeah, what did you guys think of his run during like Basel and stuff?
You know, yeah, I actually had seen a couple of his matches post-US Open in the Asian swing. I forgot who he lost to, but I just kind of happenstance to see one of his matches be highlighted on Tennis Channel. And I can't say I was left with the best impression. I was like, okay, like he definitely won his first ATP title in Lyon earlier this year. Fourth round of Wimbledon, that's great. But it seemed like he was in a rough patch. Like he wasn't really... There wasn't a whole bunch of effervescence in that Asian swing. And then fast forward to like this mini European indoor swing, he's lighting it up, you know? So yeah. I really enjoyed watching a lot of his matches in Basel. Mm-hmm. I think there's some kind of special sauce in Basel, considering who mm-hmm. the last couple of champions have been. I'm not mad at it, but yeah, he's a big, big threat. I'm not in love with, we were talking about tennis Twitter earlier, I'm not in love with the quickness of which everybody is trying to throw him into the serve by category, but I personally enjoy his weapons on the court and just his, he's not necessarily like the most electric, but he brings a certain something that I want to watch in his matches. So, you know, he's making a fan out of me.
Even personality-wise, like I remember whenever we went to his conferences at Wimbledon, he was very like calm mm-hmm. and like, you know, and there's a lot of French, well, the French players, you know, when they speak to the English or even just the, like the non-English speaking players, you know, you'll think that, oh, because of the language barrier, they're quiet. But even when he was speaking to the French press, like you could tell, like, you know, he's like, listen, I'm here to do my job. And what, like, he's that, you know, at your job, you have that staff that's like, hey, I'm here for my job. And then I'm at 5 p.m. on the door, I'm out of here. Giovanni's basically the same thing. Like you could tell it's like that. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like, first of all, I told Eugene this yesterday. I was like, you know what, when it comes to labeling serve bots, I think we're all being biased. I think we like to throw that to players that we won't throw it to players that we love, you know. So if you're mm-hmm. Isner fan, you will never call him a serve bot. If you're not Isner fan, you'll call him a serve bot. Do you get what I mean? Like it's this type of thing. But I definitely agree with you. Like this is literally his first full proper ATP like calendar like tour and stuff. Like before that, he was doing a lot of challenges. Like he really
Lucy, because to be fair, he started the year on the challenger circuit because yeah, he was mm-hmm. outside the top 200. So
yeah, but no, that's what I'm saying. But I feel like no, but like this year is a lot of the tournaments I've experienced. It was not like before. Like this is his first proper year, and he's already ranking this high. Like this is crazy. So yeah, and I know he looks tall and big. But the guy is literally like 19, 20. Like he's literally like really, really young. But yeah, yes, he has big serve, but he's very powerful. And the way his body is, you know, a lot of people like to say that, oh, Serena's body like helped her, you know, to be getting better at game. And it's like, actually, the way that she is shaped should have made it 10 times harder for her, especially moving well on the court. Giovanni's the same thing. Like he moves really well on the court, considering that he's literally 100 kg and like 10 foot. Like,
it's a lot of men out there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
I had a friend of mine. I don't remember where they saw him in person. It might have been like a 1,000 or something. But I have a friend of mine that travels to a couple of tournaments in the States, maybe even in Canada even. But they were even impressed by like how much different he looks and his stature is in person compared to on camera or like when you're watching him on television. So that's interesting. I just hope he keeps building and kind of thwarts all of that serve bot, kind of stick him in one category stuff to the side and keeps building his game. Because there's stuff there. Like you can't have a weapon of a serve like that and not get some kind of, you know, movement out of it on the tour.
Hey, and listen, if there's one thing that everyone would love to have is a good, big, strong serve. So
literally,
hey. We can, you know. Is what it is.
I think with Pecci, and this is the thing as well, we need to get it clear right here. His name is Giovanni Pecci Pericard. It's not Mpecci. The M is silent.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
A lot of the commentators are calling him Mpecci, like it's Pecci. And
Pecci,
if you go onto the ACP Tour website and you click his name, he actually says it. So it's Giovanni Pecci Pericard.
Hold on. There's a sound thing on the ATP.
Yeah.
Lucy, where have you been?
Sorry. I don't like, do you know what it is?
Content is media.
No. Do you know what it is? Because I use external, I don't use like, if I need data or whatnot, even the matches stuff, I will use like, in other words, I won't go straight to the ATP or the WTA website because, guys, I work in this industry, so when I go to the website, I'm thinking of as a marketer. I don't think as like a tennis fan, and I'm like, I don't like this. Sadly. So yeah, sorry.
No. Everything you guys have said about Pecci Pericard, like I obviously completely agree. Like, just one thing on the serve bot thing, which I completely do not subscribe to. Like, I think he's shown in Basel too, the fact that he kind of got through matches where. Yeah, he was holding serve like with ease, but like today, recording on the day he lost in Paris against Kachanov, there were some nice values in that match. Like that tiebreak, obviously everyone's talking about how he won that first set, winning what was it two points on return or on Kachanov serve.
Yeah. Like
for me, that kind of shows that he has like. A certain type of nous as well, and like you said, Miles, there's more to his game than just, you know, the big serve. He's the forehand's all. I'd say the forehand is a weapon. The one-handed backhand. How many guys on tour now have one-handed backhands?
Yeah, true.
Like this guy's a 21-year-old, like, and he has a bit of a throwback game in that sense. But yeah, I feel very excited about Pecci Pericard, and I feel like he's going to be someone now. Just in terms of obviously the French kind of contingent, there's quite a nice group of them now. Artifice, Hugo Humbert, like these young guys. I feel like they're kind of going to live up to the expectations that is, which they do weigh quite heavily on them being French. So I feel like this the sky's the limit literally for him. And we did say that as well, like in terms of his height being, you know, he's what, 6'8", 6'9". But his ceiling is so high, and I'm very excited to see like where he can go, because for me he's a certified top 20 top 10 player, definitely.
I mean, and it's unfortunate that he lost today, but he's still playing doubles with Atrofis, so that's nice, especially that day in Paris as well. So
does he like to go by Gio, by the way, like we referenced in his name? Is Gio a good nickname for him?
Gio is a nickname for the name Giovanni. But I'm seeing people on Twitter now writing GMP.
I like that too. I'm not mad at it.
GMP, I like the GMP, but yeah, as we said, he played that final against Shelton. And prior to Shelton reaching the finals, we had another Shelton versus Feast, but this one was less crazy and, you know, like very dramatic and very like heavy physical for like Fordham. Shelton won that match 6-3, 7-6. And it made me realize that Shelton has now reached 3 finals in a row and literally was not, I mean, he was just a runner up. So yeah, in Tokyo, he lost to Feast. Shanghai, he lost to Sinner. And then Basel, we have Giovanni. What do you guys think about that? Like, do you feel like it's a thing of like Shelton may need to improve certain stuff, or do you think it's just tougher opponents, or do you feel like it's not something that we should really worry about? Like, what do you guys think about it?
I am very impressed with Ben Shelton, like very impressed. I know this may not have been the follow-up season he wanted after reaching a quarter and a semi of a major, but everything else was very, very solid. And I feel like he's doing the things that make him a tough out week in, week out. Like you just showed. I don't think he made the final of 3 consecutive events, but he did lose to the champion of those events 3 times. Like in Tokyo, he lost to Feast. In Shanghai, he lost to Sinner, who went on to lift the title, and then runner-up in Basel. I think all of that combined and some of the other stuff he's been doing, like before in the lead-up in North American Swing, he's losing to the guys that either lift the title or get very, very close. Sure. And that's kind of what you want to be doing week in and week out. I'm sure he would like to translate some of those L's to W's, but it's not like he's getting wiped off the court by anybody. Like, he is a solid top 20 player, and I feel like that's even better. I wouldn't even say he's anywhere close to having a sophomore slump. He's like actually had a proper sophomore season after having a breakthrough 2023. Like, hey, I'm a guy that people are going to take seriously for a couple of years now in the season. So that's good to see.
Yeah. And you're totally right. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me. I literally got it wrong. I think I got it wrong, like you said, because he actually lost to the event like champions and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're right, yeah, he made it to the quarterfinals in Japan, lost to Feast in Japan. He won that last year and Feast ended up winning. Same thing with Shanghai, round of 16, and then it was the final at Basel that he lost to like the champion. So yeah, sorry, Eugene, you were gonna say.
No, Mars, I think well said. Like everything you just said there in terms of Shelton being this is also still kind of relatively new to him as well, kind of
exactly
life on the tour. And I feel like he's won a title this year. Was it Houston?
Yeah,
Houston.
And yeah, gone quite deep in like some big events. So I feel like he's pretty much where he needs to be, considering like where in terms of his kind of career trajectory, like I'm not expecting any more. I wasn't expecting any more from Shelton than I got this year, basically. And in saying that, like, there were some really good matches, like US Open, obviously that third round against TFO. That was
great.
What an occasion that was. The final even in Basel, like it was a good quality match.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about Shelton as well that I don't think he gets enough credit for is just his attitude, like. He's such a, there's like a lot of grace, like when he loses, like he's not a sore loser.
But
I feel like that also needs to be kind of spoken about and like kind of praised because it's tough. Like you spend more, players spend more time losing tour than they do winning. So the fact that like he's quite comfortable with that and there's no kind of like animosity or like, you know, bad face to the opponent. Like, I feel like I just respect that in him. And like, it's just nice to see because we have enough kind of, I say bad blood. Some people do like the beef or the drama.
Just at me next time, bro. No, just at me.
Not naming any names.
Just at me next time.
I'm not naming any names, but yeah, no, it's just good to see. So I think, 2024, like it's going to be 2024, 2025. I feel like there's going to be more kind of progression in the Ben Shelton kind of game and like in terms of title wins and stuff. Like I can see him kind of going better than he did this year. But in saying that, doesn't mean 2024 was like an unsuccessful year for him. Like
100%.
It was a very, very good year. So
The progression has been quick, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. The progression has been like really quick. Again, I feel like as fans, we're just greedy. And sometimes
we want it now,
you know. So yeah, but shout out to the fellas, shout out to Shelton. Those were some really great like things that I just felt like it was just best for us to, you know, discuss before we get into the main event, WCA finals. Now, before we actually crack on and really talk about the finals, how do we feel about the WTA this year? Because personally, I feel like it's another year that they carried over. Sorry. They literally carried over the men, everything. Like the matches this year, the energy, like everything. I just feel like, even especially when I looked at the draw, I think Eugene, you even said, which we're going to talk about soon, but you look at the name of the draws, you're like, this is really good. This is actually very impressive, especially compared to the ATP finals. Like, I think I'm going to sleep doing that ATP finals. Respectfully, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I have to, since, you know, I have this podcast. But
this whole tennis podcast thing.
Yeah, how did you guys feel about the WTA this year?
I'm a fan. I'm always going to be a fan of WTA.
Yeah, Miles, you're definitely. Yeah.
They produce quality athletic tennis pretty much week in, week out. I feel like mm-hmm. the Grand Slams were legit. I like the fact that we have all Grand Slam champions at the WTA finals. So I like the fact that they've kind of included that rule for a WTA or a WTA finalist in the last eight to be a Grand Slam champion, not necessarily finish in the top eight, mm-hmm. aka Barbora Krejcikova. I still think winning a Grand Slam is like winning a Super Bowl. So you should mm-hmm. be there. So I appreciate the lineup. Everybody that's there has won the biggest of the biggest titles. There really isn't like any like sneaking. You got Grand Slam champions, gold medalists, WTA 1000 champions. So, and all of, when I think about the players, all of them have been involved in some really good like runs to their titles and weeks that have been kind of exhilarating. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, no, again, completely agree. Like, I will say this though, maybe slightly controversial. And maybe it's like recency bias, but I have really enjoyed the ATP tour this year, man. Like, okay. I feel like, yeah, like, and it's because of these players that we've been speaking about, like, yeah, Jalo, Petri Perricard now as well. Like, mm-hmm. it's been nice to kind of see their kind of like rise, and I guess they've blown up like in the latter part of the year. So I feel like that's what I'm saying in terms of recency bias. But then overall, I think, yeah, the WTA, as usual, like you said, Lucy, it has carried, like in terms
Lucy's
of,
face.
In terms of entertainment and like, again, personally as well, like with regarding our platform, just seeing Jasmine Paolini's rise, like
mm-hmm. yeah.
she's been the most outstanding player, like mm-hmm. stopping tennis. Mm-hmm. And just from what she's achieved and like kind of, again, her kind of personality too, like it's just great to see someone like that at this level. And just again, all the players obviously respect her and admire her as well, because she has achieved like some major things. So like you said, Miles, everybody everyone that's there in Riyadh, you know, for the finals, you know, it is the Elite Eight and they're all there on merit. They all have like the kind of CV to kind of back up why mm-hmm. they're there. And I think it's a great event. Like, I'm really looking forward to the matches.
The only thing that I'm a little hesitant about, like, I guess the general feeling of being happy about it, is its location. Like, part of me is happy
about that. Yeah.
Part of me is happy that we have a location ahead of time that wasn't kind of like last minute, like the last three have been. But where they decided to do it is a little like, not necessarily like, I guess from morale or like, a people-centered view is not the best place. But then you look at the social clips and you see they're going full out, like money is not really, there's what's a budget in Saudi Arabia. So like that must feel good for the WTA players, but it's also like, women are kind of seen as second-class citizens and amongst other things in that part of the world. So that's not a good look, but hopefully the tennis shines over some of that. But I will kind of be thinking about it a little bit when I'm watching, unfortunately, like, Is this a place of the world that if I got tickets to, would I feel safe, mm-hmm. or what I feel, you know, stuff like that when I'm watching.
Yeah, no, that's well said. And I think, again, like, again, people need to be honest. And I feel like that is kind of a conversation that, like, has been had and will continue to be had. But, like, all I'll say to that is, like, in terms of kind of progressing things, how would we kind of move things forward if we don't kind of, like, confront issues, like, kind of head on? And I feel like this is kind of a way to do that, if that makes sense. Like, putting an event in a place or in a country like that, you know, this is, you're dealing with top women athletes here. The whole world is going to be watching. So some people call it sports washing, some people call it whatever. Like, all of those arguments are valid, but I just feel like, yeah, we need to have honest conversations, which we are having here, but then also kind of need to see from both sides, if that makes sense. Because I feel like there's reasons kind of to have an event here, and there's also obviously reasons why, or to question having an event, like, in such a country too. So it's a tough one. What are your thoughts, being a woman?
You know what it is? I get it, but in my head, I'm also like, I mean, you and I, Eugene, we've said this on a pod like multiple times, like, at the end of the day, every country in the world is messed up in so many different ways. You know, like, there was a time where, you know, like, for example, where we are in the West, you could not even, you didn't even feel safe to hold hands if you were, like, you know, gay or bisexual or whatever. Now you can get married. You get what I mean? Like, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the issue is that they're very behind. And with them, they're very behind, not just based on culture, but also religion, which can, like, you know, there's a lot of things into it. But a lot of the countries around that area and in the Middle East and stuff, they are realizing we can't, like, shut out the world. So, you know, I think Saudi Arabia, for instance, I think it was last year, they released an article saying that, you know, like, it's easier to buy alcohol, for instance. You know, like, I know this is something small, but it's just an example to show that they're trying to make that progress. And unfortunately, they have an ugly, history, but every country does, you know, everyone talks
there's
about
no perfect how, place, yeah.
There's no perfect place. Everyone's like, Portugal is great, but Portugal were the first in Europe to, you know, get in some slaves. So what are we doing? Like, do you get what I mean? Like, eventually we will need to be able to give them a chance to, like, move up. If it was a thing of, like, we bring in the WTA and you already had people saying, I've been discriminated because I'm a woman, or, like, an openly gay WTA player saying that she doesn't feel safe and so on, then I could definitely get it. But at the end of the day, they also need to have the opportunity to do so. And who knows, maybe this will actually allow to relax the laws a little bit, you know, inspire some of the changes and stuff. I think Billie Jean King, she did an interview for one of the countries, I can't remember, I think it was one of the middle, like, Eastern countries and stuff. And I think bringing in tennis in that country change some of the stuff, like, literally in their culture, like, in their, not necessarily the laws, but, like, some things were more relaxed. So I think we also, we're in a world where, unfortunately, there's been so much, like, bad things happening that at times I think we forget the impact that certain things can have. And as much as tennis might not be as big as it was, like, in the early 2000s, I feel like it can still make that little impact.
Definitely. So, people always, it's a great point, Lucy, because people always say, like, sport can change a lot, like, politically. I feel like this is also going to be, you know, an avenue for that to happen as well. Yeah. Like, you won't see the effects, like, immediately, but I feel like it's going to be the start of, you know, change in that country or in that region. It's not like tennis is the only sport to kind of go over there. Like, you've had boxing. Mm-hmm. Boxing's huge over there. They have boxing tests, like, nearly every month over there in Riyadh or Saudi Arabia.
The World Cup was there, and so many people. Exactly. Yeah, so many people were saying, like, I don't watch, well, soccer for the Americans. I don't watch soccer, but a lot of my friends who like the sport were telling me that was actually my favorite World Cup in a very long time. Mm. Yet it was in a place where, like, you know, like, there were rules and stuff. But what a lot of people also don't understand is that a lot of the rules as well are not necessarily for the people who are like based internationally. So in my head, I'm like, if you really do care, are you also advocating for the people that are there, or is it just for the international? But you never know. Again, it might actually help. But either way, it's there. And who's going to say no to some millions of money?
Right.
You got? Did you guys see the Coco locker room?
Yeah, that was
me. Her face was all over the wall. She had like a mini bed, a TV, two cubicles in her bathroom or something. Like, please, that's a lot of money.
I mean, just quickly, what are your thoughts on the six kings, Miles?
Five kings and a Holger Rune. I didn't watch any of it, to be honest with you. There's enough men's tennis on offer from week to week that I really didn't need to watch the guys that I've been watching week to week play for some more money and really nothing else on the line. So yeah, it didn't really get too much playtime in my household. But I mean, go center for pocketing that $6 million that he said he didn't play for. Share some over here.
I'm not trying to get at Sinner, but like I was like, bro, that is such a weak answer. Like, just be honest. And massive shout out to Carlos Alcaraz.
Yeah,
he came out and he was real. He said, listen, of course, like, money isn't the only motivation, but of course it's part of the motivation, you know, why we play professional sports. Like, and I was like, hello. Exactly, like anybody in their right mind knows that. So
exactly,
Jannik Sinner to kind of like go in and around and
I think right now I think it's because of everything that's happening. I think
he had a lot of going on, yeah.
But
yeah.
Even still, I feel like that would have been kind of more, I don't know, maybe not.
He just needs a good old sit down in PR 101. Somebody just needs to sit him down in one of those classes.
Just keep it real.
It's not great.
Just keep it real. People would have respected, I would have respected that more if he said,
yeah,
of course. Like,
I mean, look how everyone's reaction was when Carlos like said it, like, he knew how to answer that and stuff. Like, it was just, there's no brainer.
It was the fact that he said he used that event to like measure where he is because the best in the world are there. I'm like, dude, you won two slams. You won two slams this year. If that's not the measurement, I don't know why you go to Saudi Arabia and play this exhibition to measure your game, but sure. God. Sure, Sinner.
And to be fair, he should have been prepared that he was going to get that question. Like, come on, that's literally the biggest prize money in tennis. $6 million. You're going to turn down $6 million.
He could just give me $50K and he wouldn't even miss it. He wouldn't miss it.
I think the winner for the WTA finals, I think they get $4 million. Is it $4 million? I want to say
something.
I believe so.
It's definitely a big purse.
Is it three? I thought it was three.
It's not as much as the Six Kings, but still, no. It's still huge. But anyway, yeah, back to the WTA finals, Lucy. Let the groups.
Yes. By the way, the prize money is $5.15 million.
For like the purse or the winner?
The winner.
Oh, decent. All right now.
Decent. Yes. Okay.
Better than decent. I'll take it in my bank account.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it won't get taxed. I don't know. I hate watching people's money as well. But anyway, stop it.
Hey, it's sports. So you say the names because boy.
You know all these players. Come on.
Okay, you know what? Actually, they're easier. They're easier.
And you've been saying these names all year.
I know, not really. But there's one name I've not said it as much, respectfully. Okay, so the purple group, we have Arena Sabalenka, Jasmine Paolini. Yes, world number one. Jasmine Paolini, Elena Rybakina, Qinwen Zhang.
Mm-hmm.
That's the purple group. And in the orange group, we have Iga Swiatek, Coco Gauff, Jessica Pegula, and Barbara Krejcikova.
Exactly.
The reason why I made that face after I said Sabalenka is because you said number one, and I kind of felt like that wasn't... I really feel like Sabalenka is really not as advertised or marketed enough in general. Like, guys, she just won the US Open. You wouldn't even think so.
Two-time Grand Slam champion this year.
She's marketing in my mind because I still have that visual of her holding the US Open trophy with that red dress. So she's good in my book.
No, but this is what I'm saying. But when I'm saying that marketing, I'm talking about like outside of the tennis world. That red dress look should have been everywhere. Vogue, everywhere. Like, that was stunning. She looked really great.
She looked great, yeah.
Yeah, but either way, love Sabalenka. I wanted to know which three of the ladies from the both group, from both of the groups that impressed you the most this year, or like you're excited to see during the WTA finals.
Why three?
I just picked a number.
Oh, okay.
also, I know that you and I will most likely pick Jasmine and Coco based on BSG, so we have to pick a non-BSG player.
Yeah, I have a non-BSG player that I can talk about. But I know
you're going to go with Miles.
Do you? Do you really?
I think so.
Okay, I've talked a good bit about her. I do think for my money though, that purple group with Sabalenka, Paolini, and the other two were
Rybakina and Zhang.
Rybakina and Zhang, yeah, I'd be set for the purple group matches daily for my money. Like, nothing against the orange group. I haven't figured out why they use those colors. I have to do some research. Maybe
so random. Yeah.
That's actually a good point. Yeah,
but yeah, the purple group is where it's at. And what was your question? To pick a player that I want to come out of those groups?
Oh, you know what? Which ladies are like? Were you more impressed of like this year? Like in terms of them making it? Like, yeah.
I mean, outside of the BSG two that we have special interest in, Coco and Jasmine, which I really have been invested in, especially Coco the last week in the Asian swing or last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you were thinking this name, Eugene, but Zheng Qinwen. I got a ticket to the Zheng Qinwen show. I got it. I'm in there. I like her. I think that her game is very easy to watch. Like, you know, there's some people talk about like the hitches or whatnot in her serve, but that serve gives her free points. It's not GMP. It's not GO 150 mile per hour. But on the women's tour, like, they don't want to see her. Like, she's a tough opponent to return against, and she does pretty much everything else very, very well. So I'm all for the arc of, like, you know, Australian Open finalist, gold medalist at the Paris Olympics, and WTA finals champion, maybe. And I also really like, and this has happened a couple times in women's tennis, where like a player that lifts the WTA finals that may not have had a Grand Slam trophy under their belt already uses that as like a push through to actually win that Grand Slam trophy. Maybe not the very next one like Australia, but they may go from WTA finals champion to Grand Slam champion one day. And I'd like to see that for Zheng Qinwen. I think she's right there. There's a matchup issue with Aryna Sabalenka maybe, but everybody else, even Iga, she's pushed. I don't think she has a win over Iga, but she's shown signs that she can push her. Everybody else, I think, takes her as a threat, and I take her as a big threat for the title too, especially after just winning Tokyo like a week ago. So
yeah. Great shout. Lucy.
You go, Eugene.
Tough.
Oh, so that's why you wanted to kick it to me.
Yeah. Obviously,
okay, let me all right, I'll go. I will say I have to say Paolini first. Like, I'm sorry, to a point where you'd see people saying she's a sneak in, or like,
I don't like
sleeping,
that.
Or we didn't. Da, da, da. And I'm like, no, you've been sleeping on her. You were not aware of the possibilities. Like, we told you guys, we warned you, hey, she's coming. Did she come way faster than I expected? For me personally, yes, but I'm not mad at it. Like, if you think about her run this year, it's just been incredible. Like, two Grand Slam finals back to back, you know, she won her first 1000 title. Again, we said she won like her gold medals, doubles, and also at a French Open still. Like, she's had an incredible run, and she's generally a great player and a great person as well. For someone who's so short, shout out to all the short girls, she generally has that power, and she knows how to play some really good tennis. It's just incredible, like, to think where she was last year and to now all the way to WTA finals. And I think we called it, I think we literally said on the pod earlier this year, Eugene, like, we were like, she's gonna make it to the WTA finals. Like, she, like, literally,
I don't think people knew who Paolini was until Black Spin Global. Honestly, y'all put her on the map.
I don't want to stun or anything, but all I'm saying is the mentions were full booked and busy when people were saying, hey, we know about Paolini because of BSG, like, you know. So, hey, I mean, thank you, Miles, for saying it first. You
hey,
know,
I got to keep it real.
You know, sometimes you got to be humble and stuff, unfortunately.
Yeah, honestly, though, Lucy, you were the one that said, oh, yeah, she can make WTA finals. Like, you said
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, top 10, that'd be huge.
Yeah, like, you said top 10. Yeah, I was like, nah, don't say fan.
I was like, oh, damn.
I was like, don't say fan, I'm just going to do it. And now look, she is right here where she is. So yeah, so she definitely like impressed me a lot. Zheng impressed me, but I haven't watched a lot of her matches. So in terms of like how she plays and stuff, like I'm not that like intact, but anytime like I see her or if I'm put on TV and she's on and I watch her or I'm aware of how far she's made it, I'm always like so impressed. I'm really happy to see her in this position as well. To me, she's like, you see how to some people is like pouting, like, whoa, how did she make it here? That's how I am with her. But I'm so happy to like see her win. And whenever I watch her matches, like I'm really, really impressed. And last person, Pegula. Pegula really, okay, I won't say, I'm saying Pegula in terms of if you told me Pegula will make it to the WTA finals this year, I'd have been like,
okay.
I'm not too sure about that. The fact that she's here, I have to give her credit for me personally. I'm not, I don't want to, how can I explain this? Like, respectfully, she, if you tell me, hey, Pegula is on, I'm not going to rush upon the TV to watch her.
Oh, okay.
Respectfully, I'm not saying.
Are you rushing, just, Eugene? Are you putting down with your things and going
Regina,
to watch the Pegula
really
match?
Regina, she really likes
Pegula. I'm a fan. I do like her.
Yeah, he actually is.
Her US so Open one
Miles,
was solid.
I think it's just me and Miles are like.
I don't dislike her. I just am somewhere in the middle.
What
and
was
sometimes
that meme, every friend can beautiful gowns. Yeah, beautiful gowns.
Beautiful gowns. I think it's cool, especially from like an American centered perspective, when I'm able to like talk about women's tennis to like a football fan or even a hockey fan, which I don't really interact with those too often. I can mention, hey, that's Jessica Pegula, the daughter of the guy that owns the Buffalo Bills. And they're like, oh, I've seen her around before. Yeah. So that they get like that, like, oh, I know you're talking about kind of moment. But like tennis wise, I think she can hang with everybody in the WTA finals. Like she can hang. But for some reason, it's a little bit difficult for me to see her lifting the biggest of the biggest titles. Because I think when and we kind of saw it against Sabalenka at the US Open final, like when push comes to shove, she's not a weak player by any means, but I still think there's a couple other notches that players like a Sabalenka or a Iga, when she's playing well, can kind of, you know, push her around, for lack of a better term. But everybody else, if they're not playing their best, she's going to take advantage of it. And that's a good tactic to have as well, I guess. And she's been, what, this is her third time in the WTA finals consecutively. So she's doing something very, very well.
Yeah, that's great.
Well said. Yeah, that was really well said.
Eugene, it's your turn. You guys have covered everybody, to be honest. So I've got to be different.
You don't have to. Which one is yours?
I'm going to go Sabalenka because current world number one, two-time Grand Slam champion this year. She defended Australia. Like,
and she was injured as well, remember?
I feel like that in itself is a huge kind of achievement. And then obviously to get over the line in New York as well, considering she reached the final last year, like mentally, I think she's one of, if not the toughest player on the WTA tour. Like mentally, I'm saying. And I kind of like the kind of the battle that she has with Swiatek in terms of like going for that number one. It's been basically them two, like number one and two for, I want to say 2 years. I don't think anyone else has had it in that period of time. And obviously we've kind of spoken about like our frustration when people talk about the big three in women's tennis. And they forget Coco Gauff. Like Coco Gauff is there as well. Like she is the current world number three. She's had a good year. Obviously, she didn't win a Grand Slam this year, but she won a WTA 1000. She also won a 250 at the start of the year as well. And like she's just been consistent at the Slam.
I mean, she won doubles.
She did win a double.
She did win her first doubles Grand Slam. She did do that.
Shout. Exactly. Yeah. But like. To kind of go back to what we were saying.
Wait, where was it at?
No, that was last year. Sorry.
Wait.
No, she won the French.
Oh, French Open was Jasmine.
No, I think no. I think it was Coco and Siniakova that won the French. I think
it was Coco and Siniakova that won the French.
So yeah. When did Paolini win?
So when did Paolini win?
Wow, I don't know.
We're gonna have to go back and
she did it somewhere.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Why did I keep on saying that she won? No, but she did. Yes.
It was with Siniakova, right?
Yeah. In Paris.
No, she reached the final. Sorry, that's why I got confused. So it was
Paolini reached the final. Got it. Okay.
And Sarah against Coco and Siniakova during that final.
Hmm.
So Paolini has not won a Grand Slam this year.
No.
But just the gold medal.
But she reached the final. But she
two won finals. The gold medal. And yeah. Okay.
So sorry, guys, in case I don't edit this bit out earlier.
But yeah, getting back to what I was saying about Sabalenka, like, I feel like, yeah, she's someone that is always going to be a constant threat. I think kind of going into these finals, she probably is the favorite, like, to win it overall, like, to win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Mars, again, like, that purple group, for me, that is the standout
sure.
group.
Yeah, for sure.
And Paolini, she's the world number four right now. Like, that's it's just incredible. Like, so she should be looking at that as well, thinking, you know what, I've got wins against Rybakina this year. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's beaten Sabalenka. And Zheng, I'm pretty sure the head-to-head is is in Zheng's favor. But
yeah.
Matches like these, they're one-offs. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like head-to-heads kind of go out the window. And it's going to be fascinating to see, like, just in terms of how they match up. And like, I'm really interested to see how the courts play, because it's indoors. Like, there's no elements kind of at play in terms of like wind or, you know, weather, basically. I'm not sure what they're saying about how fast or slow the courts are. But I feel like indoor tennis probably does suit Sabalenka the most.
She has a couple of titles indoors, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. And you could probably say Swiatek as well. Like, I think she has a decent-ish record indoors. But yeah, I just feel like it's going to be a fascinating finals. But I feel like Sabalenka is the player to beat. I won't be surprised if she wins, basically, because like we said, they're all there on merit.
There's something fascinating I find about Sabalenka that Andy Roddick mentioned in his podcast that I took a listen to. The physicality and like the way that Sabalenka's gotten her body into shape. Not that she was ever in bad shape, but she's taken it from like a 10 to 11.
Yep.
And it really has helped her. And I'm interested to see how that added bit of like endurance and stamina that she has, which you don't really think of when you think of Sabalenka, because she's not a person that like uses her legs in that way. So you don't automatically think of it, but she's tough out there physically. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, everybody's kind of sort of playing on fumes or so. So I wonder if she's going to be the player to like be like, hey, like I'm physically good. I can be out here for 3 hours if I need to, and see if that helps her lift the trophy. But she's a contender for sure.
What do we think of Iga Świątek as well, getting Wim Fisset on board?
Question marks. I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I don't think Iga is in like this place of like direness. Like, I think she's going to be okay. I think the real tell will be when we get to like the French Open season. And if she's not doing well, then we can firmly say that something's going off. But I don't know. I don't know what that partnership is going to look like. Because Wim, respectfully, when I say this, is a bit of a pass around, like a good pass around, but he's taken. Yeah, he's taken his 2 or 3 years with a bunch of the WTA like former or future world number ones, and like the results are okay. I just am interested to see. I don't think he's ever gotten with a player as they've like currently or maybe are on the about to be world number one like Iga. I don't know. I have to fact check that more, but I'm just interested to see what kind of Iga comes out, because we haven't seen her play at all since the US Open. This is probably the most interested I've been in her for a while.
Cut that tea. Okay, but no, I'm with you, to be honest. I'm actually like curious to see, because it's been months of her not playing, and most importantly, it's not like her surface. You know, clay is really, really, really her thing. Like, of course, she's great on the hard court as well, but you know, you even just said earlier, like, you know what, let's just see how it is to like the French Open, but for now is, you know, vibes and stuff. But mm-hmm. yeah, I'm really curious to see how she is mentally on the court, and also definitely physically as well. Was it a thing where was she injured for both, or she just pulled out?
She, I remember in her press conference after the Pegula loss at the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open, they really asked her, I don't know which journalist it was, but they asked her specifically, was she interested in taking a break? And she was proper, like, no, I'm going to keep playing, even though that loss kind of hurt for her. But she actually has taken a break. She hasn't played since then. So I'm wondering, I'm wondering what happened between like that loss and the announcement that she was switching coaches and leaving the Wojtkowski guy. His name escapes me, but you know, they did great work together. So I'm interested to see like what her mindset is going into a place where she's honestly the defending champion. She won in Cancun last year, so you know, interesting to see what her first time on the court in a couple of months looks like. I hope she's not wearing that same on kit, but you know, that's another.
On, please help us.
if they produce the same like ombre kits going into 2025, we got.
Well, you know that's what we got. Just get yourself prepared. That's, you know. I'm just hoping in 2025, like they change it. Like you guys have too much money. Their trainers are so expensive. Like, I'm sorry, where's all that money going to? They should be going to designers. To, you know, yeah. And Iga's number, like, come on, like, Iga is like, she was the number one player for so long. You know, she has mm-hmm. all these titles and stuff. Like,
and she still could end the year world number one, I think, because it's still a battle.
That's what makes it exciting as well. Like, mm-hmm. exactly, that's up for grabs. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's kind of more reason to kind of like, I guess, be invested in it because that's also mm-hmm. on the line. So,
and the group she's in, I mean, respectfully, the head to head with Coco is definitely in her favor. Isn't she in there with Krejcikova as well? Or no? Yeah. Krejcikova has tested her, and then who's the other player?
Pegula.
Yeah, she has a good head to head against Pegula and Coco. So I mean, she kind of got a good swipe of it getting into that group because everybody.
And also, she hasn't played for a while. Mm-hmm. They're coming in with like matches under recent matches under their belts.
Yeah,
like, that could go either way. Either she's going to be fresh or she's going to be rusty. Yeah, don't really know which one's going to show up.
The only thing I'll say on the coach situation, like I don't know. I'm always this way. Like Lucy called me boring or whatever. I feel like we put too much on coaches in terms of like, I don't know. At the end of the day, the players are the ones out there on the court. So it's like, of course, a coach has a job or role to play like in that player's game. But ultimately, it's down to the player. So I just feel like with Wim Fassett, he's proven, his CV is pretty good. Like he's worked with some pretty top players. And it's interesting what you're saying, Miles, about like kind of players he's worked with, how he hasn't actually got anyone that was like maybe on the verge of like getting to number one. King Ming Jen, she was kind of on that path or trajectory, like in terms of improving and becoming a top 10 player. I'm not sure when he left when he left the team where she was in terms of her ranking, but she was definitely a name people were talking about, saying, oh, this is like the next player to look out for. So I mean, and maybe, I say maybe, she's done pretty well since, you know, he's left camp. But I feel like with Iga, like, her game is so solid, like, there's not going to be much that needs, like, fine-tuning or, like, adapting or fixing, basically. I feel like everything's pretty much in place. And I feel like she just basically made this change because she just wanted a change of, like, I guess scenery, or for want of a better word, like there's nothing wrong with switching things up. And it's something you're always kind of accusing certain players in the ATP tour, Lucy, which I won't name any names. Mark, I'm also guilty of that too. But we're not talking about ATP, we're talking about WTA.
Now he put us on the spot.
I feel like it's a good thing and it's exciting. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see where it goes.
The last thing I'll say about Iga is that I actually do think there's room for improvement in her mentality, because the last couple of losses that she's had, she's like visibly gotten tight out there, and I know like people accuse me of being an Iga hater or whatever, but I was on the watch out for Iga before she won that first French Open. And if you look at the way she won that French Open, there's a fluidity and a freeness, I guess, that obviously comes from not having expectations. But her game style is, I don't want to say a little, it's actually much different than when I first met her. She's much more compact and like tight and more focused. And I'm interested to see if there's a looseness that Wim can bring to her game, because I think that's actually what's missing. Sometimes she gets very tight and almost stubborn to the game plan instead of using the fact that she's a really good athlete and can cover the court. And that's actually what got her closer to, like, you know, the Roland Garros that she won initially. So I'm interested to see if they ever like watch some old tapes of like when she was on the come up and not world number one. So it'll be interesting to see if that is a pillar of what they work on. We'll see.
Yeah, I do feel like she does definitely put a lot of pressure on herself, which is, you can see in her game now.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was very obvious this year. And I feel like when there's that, I don't know, there could be like the first time she lost her number one ranking, like she took it really, really like to heart. But at the same time, it's weird, like you can't really like figure out, is it a thing where she's like a serious competitor, or is she really putting so much pressure to a point where it's showing in her game? And you know, I think she gets a bit lucky that some players can't easily get to her head, and maybe that's where her mental coach helps a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see how it goes anyways. But in terms of the matches, so we've obviously got some of the matches set for Saturday and Sunday. So the first match is going to be Sabalenka versus Zhang.
That's a good one.
Yes. And that's a very great start. Heavy start. Like, when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, we eating. cancel my weekend plans. So, yeah, obviously, the head-to-head, as we said, it is a favorite to Sabalenka. Their recent match was at Wuhan final. And that was the only match that went into a 3-set. So everything else was like literally straight sets. But it shows to you the improvement from Zhang as well. And obviously, at that time, she was playing home. So there was a lot of support. And she definitely, 100% definitely had more feel in her. So I'm hoping that it will like literally be the same for this match. And then the following match after that is Paolini versus Rebekina. She hasn't played in a while either, right?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
There were question marks as if she was even going to come.
She was even going to pop up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so she's another one as well. Head-to-head is a tie, but Pauline has beaten her more on hard court, including this year in Dubai where she won her title. Yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah. So looking forward to that. And then Sunday, we have Iga versus Krejcikova, who is, I saw a video earlier, like she's practicing, but she's not there yet.
I think she's still in the Czech Republic.
Yeah,
something like
she
that.
Ain't there, and she was practicing. I'm like, girl, you need to go and hit up these new courts. You have no idea what they're looking like. Like, hello,
she's a bit of a strange bird, like in a good way. Like,
yeah,
off the court,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Off the court, she's a little quirky in her own way. Like, she's one of the girls that'll like stay around and watch some of the tennis where everybody else is packing up and going, and she'll interact with her followers and stuff. But on the court, there's a certain smoothness to Krejcikova's game that I really, really enjoy. I just wish that she was able to kind of produce it in a, like, I can see it coming kind of way, because the two Grand Slams she's won, I didn't see coming.
That's a good point. No,
so maybe this is right up her alley. Maybe she likes to kind of come in when nobody's thinking about
just pop
her.
Up. She's like, I'm going to show you guys. And then the last match that day on a Sunday, All-American, we've got Coco versus Pegula. I completely forgot that the head-to-head was Pegula was that much like ahead, which is 5-1. And literally that one time that Coco beat her was even at Eastbourne last year. So there's even complete different surface. But again, I feel like the Coco that Pegula is going to get this tournament, I feel like it's going to be a little bit different. I think not a lot of people are aware that forehand has improved a lot. You know, the only thing that obviously, like, during the Asian swing, she showed to us that quickly she could, you know, make up some changes. Obviously, yes, there's some things that still need to be improved on, but she did still improve a lot. But specifically with this match, considering that she's playing against like Pegula, like, what do you guys think that she will literally need to like do in order for her to win this match?
I think the things that have been talked about ad nauseum need to be good that day, like the serve and the forehand. And I think Pegula knows full well that those are the things in her game that she's working through. So yeah. Pegula's obviously, if she wants to win, she's going to pick on second serves and forehands. Mm-hmm. But Coco's going to have to be steady and like use a little bit of aggression that kind of is naturally on her, in her game, especially on that backhand side, and use it to kind of win points. I think Pegula being the wall that she is, especially like how flat she hits the ball, there's not really a lot of spin. I think that can be bothersome to Coco, but it depends on like what kind of Coco is up to the service line that day. We can't have double faults because Pegula is going to take advantage of that. So
yeah, we'll see. That's true. And I feel like Pegula really knows Coco's game.
Mm-hmm.
Like where, like out all of the players, especially the ones that we have here, I feel like she knows like the ultimate best, and hence why it's been like, you know, the head-to-head is so literally far ahead. But yeah, I definitely like agree with you, because when she has that forehand and those serves on lock, it's like, because I said it so many times this year, like these girls are still not beating her when she's not playing her best anyways. So can you imagine when she plays her best? So yeah, literally, if she only locks in those two, she can easily beat Pegula or make it very far into the finals. What do you think, Eugene?
No, I agree. I thought what you said, Miles, as well about her being aggressive, I think that needs to be the kind of mindset from the jump. Like just, yeah, play all out aggressive tennis, because yeah, Pegula's so solid, like she's going to get everything back. But you can, I think Coco is capable of out hitting her. And I think that's what she needs to do, like, in terms of tactically. We haven't mentioned, Lucy, the fact that, well, doubles is also going on. So last year...
Yeah, but they didn't release the doubles details. That's why
I think they're in the groups already. I think.
Yeah, the groups are there.
Are they in the groups now? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
We can talk about them quickly. But I'm just saying, last year, Pegula and Coco, they were also playing doubles, whereas this year, they're just playing singles. And I think that's also going to... We'll see that play or have an effect on their kind of match play this year. Just because they're just solely focused on singles, whereas Paolini, she's playing both singles and doubles. So it's going to be interesting to see how she kind of deals with, I say, the pressure, like not having the day off, because she's going to be playing back-to-back day. That's going to be quite tough. But I feel like with Paolini, the way she's kind of just gone about this year, I don't see it being a problem. I feel like she's just going to basically carry the momentum from like match to match. But I feel like for Coco, specifically in this case, like it's going to benefit her, like only focusing on singles.
Paolini needs a vacation. I want to take a vacation for her.
But because I feel,
she's played a lot of tennis.
And then after this, she's got the Billie Jean King Cup finals as well.
They wouldn't see me. I'd be in the Maldives somewhere.
Honestly, but that's actually the question that I asked after the US Open. I was like, so are you going to go like rest or something? She's like, I think Paolini is just really enjoying the moment. Like, you know, like, you grind for so long and you're having this. So yeah, I think for her, it's just like, you know, all
it's
of this
career year.
It's a career year. So, you know, but yeah, you're right. Honestly, I really hope she takes that holiday or doesn't start too early because, you know, the calendar year ends and start literally in December, the same day. So
we should talk about the doubles as well. So the green group, we've got top seeds, Ludmila Kichanok and Yelena Ostapenko, solid. Sue Shea, Elise Mertens, they're the third seeds. Nicole Medakar-Martinez and Ellen Perez, they're the sixth seeds. And Katerina Siniakova, Taylor Townsend, they're the eighth seed. Shouts out to Taylor Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
It's her debut as well, the WTA finals.
That's huge.
Massive. Yeah. And then in the white group, we've got Gabriela Dabrowski and Erin Vautliff. They're the second seeds. Sara Rani, Jasmine Paolini, the fourth seeds. Fifth seeds, Caroline Dolahide and Desiree Kravchuk. And then the seventh seeds, Chan Chao Ching and Veronika Kudermetova. So obviously all of these players as well, there's definitely some Grand Slam champions in there, obviously. And WTA 1000 champions too. So
yeah,
in terms of what we were saying about kind of players being there on merit, of course, these are the top eight teams like in doubles as well. but this is Blacks being global. We need to focus on Taylor Town. What a year she's had, man. Like,
amazing.
That Wimbledon run was just insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think this kind of started for me last year in terms of her kind of winning big titles and like going deep in like these doubles events. And something mm-hmm. you said, Lucy, as well, I think you mentioned it first, her ability to kind of adapt to like whoever she's playing with, for it to be like an effective team. And clearly her and Siniakova, they work well together. Like, so yeah. I'm very excited to see like what they can do.
For sure.
Well, what are your thoughts, Miles, in terms of specifically on Taylor Townsend?
I'm still replaying the latest TikTok she posted on Instagram with that Glorilla, with that Glorilla song. I really enjoyed that. I've enjoyed Taylor. I remember, I don't know if I put this on my podcast or like out there in the ether or not, but I remember when she announced that she was pregnant and everybody was kind of like, well, is this the end? Like, is she going to try to come back? I wasn't sold on the idea of like singles being the focus or where the focus should be, but she's also told me to mind my business on that because her singles has not been bad. But I always mm-hmm. thought that I've always thought that doubles is where the bag would be for Taylor Townsend, mm-hmm. and that she's proven me right in that. Like, Cincinnati title last year, Wimbledon final, or Wimbledon title this year, now in the WTA final, some other wins on the tour, like, and she can play with pretty much anybody. Like, yeah, she has special sauce. When she hits the doubles court, and you know, like going back to her speech at the mixed doubles final with Donald Young, like she just has a presence and an aura about her that makes her fun to watch, and she makes doubles fun to watch. So
exactly,
I'm with Taylor Townsend, and I think she has like a bunch more Grand Slam doubles titles in her, and I love the fact that she can do it with different partners. And I don't know, I don't think she's even cracking 30 yet, so doubles can really be a long mm-hmm. career. If she keeps playing and prioritizing the doubles, I don't see why she can't win more slams. And you know, before you know it, she might be a Hall of Fame contender. You know, with those exactly. with those kind of trophies, exactly. she really is good in doubles, especially mixed doubles. I want to see her get some mixed doubles titles at the slams too. So I'm all for Taylor Townsend.
And I think like it's great. I feel like it would be really great for the sport itself, especially like in doubles as well, because you know, if you have, at the end of the day, the players are the one who brings in like the people and like the fans. So at the US Open, whenever Taylor Townsend was playing, it mm-hmm. was packed.
Yeah,
you know, like literally it was full. Like she was really bringing in the people and like the vibes and stuff. So this will also give more attention to doubles, so she can literally she has the ability to bring in that impact in like in so many different ways. Like more people have interest into it and have more fun into it. Like a lot of like the doubles matches that I've enjoyed this year are literally the ones that had Taylor in it. If you didn't have Taylor mm-hmm. you know, or Eva Paolini, but in all honesty it was mainly with like Taylor because of her playing style and the way that she is and her attitude in court, like on court as well. Like, you know, you could tell she's the boss. Like mm-hmm. she said yes and it is so. So yeah, I'm really happy for her. Honestly, I'm happy for her run this year and really, really happy to see her playing the WTA finals. Her and Siniakova are great together. Yeah. And obviously we have to always give our predictions. Guys, this is a free space. Please.
Ladies first.
Who do you think? Oh, here we go.
Yes, WTA finals, ladies first.
Okay. We kind of already said it, but I really think Sabalenka is going to be a big threat and most likely going to lift that trophy. I was really impressed with her this year. I think I slightly said it earlier. I feel a lot of us even forget the fact that she was literally injured. So she was not playing for a little moment mm-hmm. during like the grass season and stuff. And my girl came back and she won a title. Like you wouldn't even think that she literally didn't really play. I also feel like in terms of, you know, it's funny because we talk about the difference between her and Iga and stuff. And I feel like she has a little bit more range in terms of like the titles that she won and the opponents that she's beaten and how she literally plays compared to Iga. And, you know, it's not only just focus on one surface. Like, I feel like literally Sabalenka is a threat in all all surfaces, even grass. I mean, Wimbledon, she made it all the way to the quarters or semis.
She's been a two-time semi-finalist at Wimbledon. Yeah,
yeah. She didn't play Wimbledon this year, though. But yeah,
she didn't play this year. Yeah, yeah. But still, she's made it like literally that far. And think about it: there's one year she didn't play, which had nothing to do with her. It was all political. So can you even imagine as well? So yeah, honestly, listen, I love Sabalenka. I love her personality. I love her playing style. I love that she's a girly girl. Like, I love her on Instagram with her Birkins and stuff. You know me, I'm a very girly girl. So, yeah. But aside from that, she's a fantastic player. She's really fun to watch as well. So, yeah. I mean, looking at all the other players, everyone's been great. But she's 100%, like, she's called Big Lenka for a reason. So, I have her lifting the title. Eugene, since you were quick.
No. It's Miles. Guest. Miles. Should we not get a doubles winner as well?
Who? Yeah. Sabalenka?
I'm saying you're not going
to... We should give her a doubles prediction.
Oh, doubles. Should we give doubles? I mean, I'm going to be biased because I'm not going to lie. There's some double players here. Respect.
I know you're not watching Kitchen Knocking off the Bank. I know you're not watching that.
I don't know, man. Shout out to Ostapenko, though. Shout out to Ostapenko. When I saw her picture on the suitcase going to the TA finals, I was like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, doubles. But obviously, they won the US Open, right?
I think they did. Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah,
they
won the US. Okay, so I know a little something, but sorry, I'm definitely going to go for Taylor Thompson. Like, listen, that is, when I'm biased, I put my hands up. I always say I'm being biased. I want Taylor Thompson to win that title. So, yeah, Sabalenka, Taylor Thompson, and Siniakova to win the title.
Yeah. As much as I want Coco to lift that trophy, I think that would be huge for her, especially considering the new coach that she just got, or like that new coaching setup. I struggle to envision her lifting the trophy after it's all said and done. But somebody that's easier to envision it, I already name dropped her, but Jing Chen Wen. I'm on the train. I think she has serious momentum. Her game has literally improved since we saw her get to that Australian Open final. And I think she's going to be a problem for everybody to deal with in her group. And if she gets out of that group, I think she's going to be a problem for the next person across the net from her. So I think I can see her lifting the title. I'm going to go with Jing Chen Wen. On the double side, although I would love to see Taylor Townsend win it, I'm going to be a little bit different.
Okay.
I really want Taylor Townsend to win that. Let's keep it going because we kind of mentioned that Paolini won a Grand Slam, but she didn't. let's give Paolini and Sarah Arani that WTA Finals trophy.
I like that.
Let's give it to her.
Okay. I like that. So I think the winner is going to come from the purple group.
Okay.
And I want to be different, but it's tough. Because, yeah, you guys have basically said two names that I kind of agree with and can see definitely winning. So, for the sake of being different, I'm going to go Paolini. Just because, like, I think it's in keeping with the year that she's had in terms of, like, just playing, like, beyond expectations and, like, things not really making sense, but making sense at the same time, if that makes sense. So to kind of maybe go against my own argument, I do feel like the doubles will have an effect as well, but I feel it's going to have a positive effect in terms of like momentum and just getting the kind of confidence to be kind of going out there and competing. I don't think she's putting any kind of pressure or expectations like on herself. Yeah. I think it would also play into her, like just playing freely. So Jasmine Paolini to be the end of year finals champion for 2024.
And what about the doubles?
Doubles, ooh.
you're the one who even said it.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go Siniakova Townsend.
Okay, cool.
And I'm just going to go off that, they've got great chemistry. Obviously, they won a doubles Grand Slam this year as well. But I just thought it's a beautiful story for Townsend.
Yeah.
And I am rooting for them. Like, even more so than Paolini and Arani, even though, of course, we're massive Paolini fans and Arani. Shouts out to both of them as well, being, what, 5'4"? Too short.
Kidding it. And Sarah Rani, she actually won a Grand Slam with mixed doubles, remember, against Taylor.
More reason for Taylor. Like,
yeah,
you want to know, gold medal, Grand Slam. Let's share it out.
Wait, I don't think we've seen any footage from Taylor actually in Saudi Arabia yet, right? Because wouldn't she be giving us a tour of her like locker room if they did for the singles?
Especially Taylor.
Sure. I want to see all those pictures in her locker room.
aren't the doubles starting later?
No, they start the same day. Like the schedule Saturday? For Saturday. Yeah, the schedule for Saturday.
How
the first
one I was looking, because I didn't see anything. So I was like, I literally thought, okay, maybe this time the double is.
I want to say the double. I think doubles start the days.
Yeah, it's double singles. Doubles, singles. The first doubles is a Dabrowski and Rutliff versus Chan and Kudermetova. That starts the whole thing Saturday.
Because I wasn't seeing anything.
Very exciting, man.
Wait, that's Sunday. Sorry. Saturday is Mertens and Perez,
okay, cool. Well, we are definitely going to tune in and watch that. Yeah, you see what I did there? But Miles, thank you so much for joining us. I was like, who else to have on here if we're going to be talking about the WTAs especially? But yeah, guys, make sure that you give Miles a follow. Tune into tennis on Twitter, Instagram, literally everywhere. You type
all the socials,
all the socials. You're gonna see him turning into his pod. And also make sure you, I'm pretty sure you're gonna, are you gonna host some spaces here and there?
Yeah, I'll be hosting spaces during the WTA finals. I'll probably be doing some live match watch alongs on my YouTube channel as well. So,
we'll be
tuned
in.
How do you
find that during the whole live stuff, by the way? Because I'm not gonna lie, I need a little bit more practice to do it. Eugene, I feel like Eugene believes that I can do it. And I'm like, okay, you keep on believing that. But, you know.
the live watch-alongs are cool to me. Like, I enjoy it the most when there's actual conversations being had in the chat. Or else I'm just talking to myself, which can be fun, I guess, in its own way. But it's really cool to kind of just see the matches and mostly watch with other people in real time. So the YouTube lives and Twitter Spaces live, it's just nice to kind of feel connected with people through digital mediums all across the world watching the sport we love. So it's all good.
Yeah. Well, we'll be tuning in, and we'll definitely, I'll be, if you have any of the spaces, I'm going to be there, because this weekend, this WTA, I'm seeing some really good matches. Obviously, we still have Paris, but again, it's the fellas. Who cares? I'm here for the ladies. But yeah, guys, hope you guys enjoyed. Make sure that you check out our socials to get some daily updates on the matches. Since I'm taking a Twitter break from my personal account, I'm going to be tweeting a lot more. So yeah, I'll definitely be live tweeting. But yeah, hope you guys enjoy the pod, and we will catch you next time. Peace.
Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
Take it easy, guys.